From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Nadia Hamdan, sitting in for Al Letson. It may be the American-Israeli war against Iran, but that war has expanded into much of the Middle East. Almost immediately after being hit, Iran retaliated against Gulf countries, firing thousands of missiles and drones into places like the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and Qatar, all of which host American military bases. And people like Leila Hassan have been glued to their phone. Leila is a journalism professor at Northwestern University, Qatar. She lives in Doha and has been sending me updates on the situation, but keeps finding herself interrupted by the distant sound of explosions.
It depends on who manages to get on these flights in time, but, oh, we just heard an interception now. There are kids playing at the local playground, so I could hear their startled screams. But so far, that was just one. That was another.
These interceptions are the sound of the Qatari military destroying Iran's missiles and drones in midair.
I think that was an interception.
When this happens, Leila gets an emergency alert on her phone to take cover so as not to be hit by falling debris.
So I'm sending you this voice note as things are unfolding. Oh! That sounded like a strike and not an interception. Wow, that startled me.
Then there's Lebanon. After Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was killed, the Iran-backed militia Hezbollah fired missiles into Israel, prompting retaliation. Bezalel Smotrich, a far-right minister in Israel, warned that Dahieh, Beirut's southern suburb and Hezbollah's stronghold, should evacuate, saying, "You brought hell on yourselves." He said Dahieh will look like Khan Yunis, a reference to the city that was largely destroyed by Israel's war in Gaza. In recent weeks, Israeli strikes on Lebanon have displaced more than 1 million people and killed more than 1,000.
We live in dystopia. We're powerless, or we feel powerless.
Justin Salhani is a journalist based in Beirut. He's also been sending me updates since the strikes began. And we want to close today's show listening to what life has been like for him and the Lebanese people as the country teeters on the brink of another major war. After Israel ordered Dahieh residents to evacuate, Justin says you could feel the change in the city almost immediately. People setting up makeshift homes and parking lots, on sidewalks, along the seaside promenade, known as the Corniche.
Now I'm down by the seafront at the start of the Corniche. And there's a number of displaced people here. It's almost iftar time, and it's golden hour, so the light is really beautiful.
In some ways, it still feels normal. There are people exercising, men scrolling on their phones, kids playing soccer. But he also sees benches covered with blankets.
Some people have set up small kind of campsites, like with foldable chairs or plastic chairs. Mattresses are folded up next to them. They've got pillows and things like that.
Justin is with a friend who is filming a documentary. Soon, a crowd of displaced kids swarm around him to look at his camera, asking him how it works.
One of the kids is totally in love with the camera.
The young boy is holding a toy gun. Justin says that's when an older man nearby interjects.
And he told the kid, listen, do you like the camera? Is it nice? And the kid said, yeah, it's my dream to be a cameraman when I grow up. The guy said to him, good. So you see that gun? Take that idea out of your head and focus on the camera instead, because look where this war has gotten us.
Justin lives just a short drive from the Corniche, in a neighborhood called Ras Beirut, far west of the city center, right along the sea. He says it's packed with people seeking refuge. Blocked alleyways, cars double parked, people searching for apartments. The school next door to his house has been turned into a shelter, housing around 1,200 people.
People are very much shook, afraid, nervous. There is a bit of panic. We're packing go bags just in case.
Justin and his wife are preparing for the worst. But in the first week of the war, he felt it would be safe to stay in their home. Dahye, the southern suburb targeted by Israeli strikes, is about 6 miles away. Far enough that Justin felt okay. But that started to change.
Yesterday morning, we woke up to loud booms, and it really shook us.
I woke up around 4 a.m., and I had a bunch of messages. My phone was buzzing, and realized I'd slept through a drone strike about a 10-minute walk away in a place called Rauf.
We got woken up for the second time at night. There was a blast, but it sounded different. It was more like a slow rumbling blast than almost like thunder.
By the second week of the war, the fighting had only intensified. That slow rumble Justin heard was a strike that happened in another seemingly safe and densely populated neighborhood, less than 2 miles away.
So I'm at the site of the attack in a neighborhood called Aisha Bakr. So a lot of people that cordon off the area. Apparently there was an unexploded ordnance as well. The buildings across the street have had their glass blown out. And then here on the scene, there's quite a bit of wreckage. Two floors just completely blown out.
That night, Justin and his wife wouldn't get much sleep.
Hi, Nadia. Tonight seems to be the most violent night so far. Warplanes are constantly overhead. They've been striking the southern suburbs extensively. The photos are quite horrific. It looks like Smotrich's claims that they want to turn Dahye into Khan Yunis are underway.
Israel's bombardment of Dahye has cratered buildings, resembling some of the destruction seen in Gaza. Israel is also amassing troops along its border with southern Lebanon and has issued a blanket evacuation order extending as far as 25 miles north. And Israel's strikes are no longer isolated to Hezbollah strongholds. Buildings and cars have been targeted in central Beirut. Israel has even issued evacuation orders for some of these neighborhoods.
That sense of security is now gone, and we don't know if there are any limits. Nobody feels completely safe, I think.
And on top of all of this, Justin says there's another growing fear.
It feels like we're doomed to see war repeating itself, you know, potential civil conflict repeating itself.
Justin is referring to Lebanon's brutal civil war from 1975 to 1990. Sectarian violence devastated the country, and in 1982, Israel took control of southern Lebanon and held it for 20 years. Justin and other people I talk to tell me they worry it all could happen again, as many people in Lebanon are growing increasingly frustrated that Hezbollah is dragging the country into repeated conflicts with Israel.
Basically, we're all at the ages that our parents were when the war ended. And so if the war started, you know, I'm almost 40. You know, a 15-year conflict, you think about your life very differently, and it really rewrites what your future might be.
By the end of the second week of the war, Israeli planes drop leaflets over Beirut, seemingly stoking these divisions.
The flyers basically call on us, the Lebanese people, to rise up against Hezbollah, which is kind of just absurd. You know, I mean, already people do everything they can to oppose them for the most part. I mean, apart from their supporters, obviously, who support them because they feel that they're the only protector they have against Israel.
Roughly a third of the country supports Hezbollah, which has the most powerful political party and military force in Lebanon. So Justin says even though many people oppose the group, including much of the Lebanese government, he feels like there is little they can do. And Israeli officials have said this won't be a short war. There was another flyer the Israelis dropped over Beirut that day that many Lebanese read as a threat. It looked like the cover of a magazine with a headline that read, "The New Reality in Lebanon."
It talks about how the great success of Gaza is now arriving to the new reality of Lebanon.
Yeah, it's madness, it's insanity. And I had a couple of friends messaging. One of them told me this is a level of fear they haven't felt before. Yeah, we don't know what's coming next.
And perhaps that's been one of the scariest things about the war. No one seems to know what's coming next. This show was produced by me and Reveal's Najeeb Amini. Lou Olkowski and Brett Myers edited the show. Special thanks to Daniel Moatar and Denise Ajiri. Melvis Acosta and Sarah Salaji are our fact-checkers. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Zulema Cobb. Score and sound design by Jim Briggs and Fernando Aruda. They had help this week from Claire Mullen. Taki Telenidis is our deputy executive producer. Our executive producer is Brett Myers. Our theme music is by Camerado Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Park Foundation, the Schmidt Family Foundation, and the Hellman Foundation. Support for Reveal is also provided by you, our listeners. We are a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Nadia Hamdan, sitting in for Al Letson, and like he always says, there is always more to the story.